This show is called Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. I'm Kevin Kelly. And on the show today, we have a number of cast members from the University of Illinois' production of Rodgers and Hammerstein's musical South Pacific, which has lots of well-known tunes. I always forget that so many of these tunes that we recognize come from this musical, which I've only had the chance to see once myself, and you can have that opportunity. You actually have four opportunities next week, Thursday through Sunday, at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. Eduardo Diaz-Munoz is the conductor. He's with us on the show along with the students from the program, and we'll tell you more, and you will hear plenty from South Pacific. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was the overture to Rodgers and Hammerstein's musical South Pacific. And this was from the original Broadway cast recording. And that cast starred Mary Martin and Ezio Pinza. And in this case, the orchestrations are by Robert Russell Bennett, which means they're wonderful. And musical director for this production was Salvatore dell'Isola. And for the production about which we are going to speak on Live and Local today, the musical direction is and conducting is by Eduardo Diaz-Munoz, who is also director of the opera program at the University of Illinois. The stage director is Don Harris, and we have four members of the cast of South Pacific with us on the program. Their performances start next Thursday and run through next Sunday, so it's the 25th through the 28th. Evening performances Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and a Sunday matinee. At 3 o'clock, everything is at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. And we're pleased to have all y'all on on the show today. And we're looking forward to hearing some nice singing and playing.
Thank you, Kevin, for having us here.
It was a pleasure. So why do a musical? It's been years, I think, since the opera program has done a musical. It used to be annual, but it's been a long, long time.
Well, there were several facts that played on the equation. When I first came here in 2003 as a guest to conduct a Puccini double bill, then I was hired immediately to do, on February of 2004, Sweeney Todd. And I had never, ever conducted a musical in my entire life.
I actually forgot that Sweeney Todd was in the mix there, and Candide somewhere along the line, too.
Right, exactly. And well, Candide was my responsibility. Okay. I take full responsibility for that. but I really liked to work on Sweeney Todd. It was a new piece for me. And even though in my visits to New York, I always like to go to Broadway. You know, I've seen a number of musicals. And I always thought that one of America's great contributions to the stage of the world, is precisely a musical. I always thought that here at U of I, we don't have that particular program. We have theater and we have opera. And that eventually we could think or dream about having a musical theater program, something that has not been accomplished, and probably it'll take us a while to do, because it requires a number of ingredients in the talent that any performer may have. We have one here, which is Julia, because she's doing her major is in acting, but she's doing a minor in music. So, but anyway, going back to why, well, the financial situation that we all are fully aware of, prompted us to talk about how we could have better ticket sales other than the usual big titles in opera. So we started to talk about certain musicals. And we played a little bit with Oklahoma, with Carousel, even with Showboat. And I said, okay, I said to myself, and then I shared it with the rest of the voice faculty and Dr. Kramer, if we're going to go through this, I think that we better nail down what is considered a hit, or what I would consider, being a foreigner, the most successful musical in history. So I focused on South Pacific. And why I thought of South Pacific, because as a child, I watched the original movie, probably in the mid-60s, it arrived to Mexico. And I really liked the tunes. Of course, I was young enough not to realize what was underneath the plot that came at a later day in my adult life. And that's that were the main reasons. So basically it was financial reasons, and because I'm sure that it's going to be sold out, then to offer our students an opportunity in a different field, not only opera, and because it the plot lies with very important matters that have been crucial to America. So those were my main three reasons to go with South Pacific.
And it's I don't actually know what was South Pacific's reception as far as audience goes. I know that it won a bunch of Tony Awards and mm-hmm. and so on.
And at one point it got banned. There was legislation after a 2-week sold out tour to Atlanta in the 50s. And there were two, a Senate member and a state legislator that from Georgia that banned it, that felt offended by the song You Have to Be Carefully Taught. And there's actually an article, unfortunately, in my haste, I didn't bring it, but I quoted in my welcome note. It was published in the New York Times on March 1st, 1953. And to me, and to most of our eyes, it's pretty shocking, because they talk about half-breeds, that song is trying to justify the relation that it's interracial. So it's a very tough statement that these two gentlemen did. And they felt so offended by the text of that song that legislation went through so that anything that had an underlying philosophy inspired by Moscow should be banned. And of course, Hammerstein's reply was that he felt surprised that anything humane and kind must necessarily originate in Moscow. So it was a quite, those years were tough years for sure. And of course, we know the history afterwards, with this junior hysterical senator from Wisconsin and Mr. Hoover, after McCarthy and Hoover teamed up, and those
persecution years. I like the way you put that, the junior hysterical senator.
Well, or hysterical junior senator, whatever.
Yeah.
First inversion, that'll do anyway.
Either way, the hysterical was the good part. Does that happen to be a song you brought along? I don't know what your playlist is for today, but is that one of the songs you're planning to do today?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I think now that you've talked about it, maybe we should do that, because now I'm very curious to know what the words are. As I said in my introduction to the show today, I've only ever seen the show once. Champaign Urbana Theater Company did it a number of years ago. And I probably shouldn't even say this. Are you planning to sing Bali High? Is that going to be on
the thing?
Okay.
That's one of the signature songs.
I know, and I can't stand it.
We can change the key.
No,
that'll
no,
make
no.
You
it's,
feel
it's,
better.
No, it's that opening thing, and of course the whole overture starts and yada. It immediately gives me the creeps. I don't know why. It's just, it's a nice song otherwise. I happened to mention this to somebody at the Canopy Club the other day for another show, and he said he's also singing it in some situation, but in any event. Other than that, it's a great show. It's just personal prejudice. We have things we like and things we don't. And that one, I don't know. But I think it was a good show when CUTC did it. I know they had a really wonderful Emile Debec, who actually had been a graduate of this program here. And so in the roles, I guess we should introduce the folks who are with us.
Absolutely.
Don't sit down. Where are you going? I got your name.
Well, he was getting ready
yeah,
to say.
Yeah, he was great. I'm not going to ask him to speak just yet, other he can yell at the microphone. Ryan Milstead is one of the two people playing Emil de Beck. The other is Ricardo Sepúlveda.
Right.
Is that how he says his name?
Perfect.
I think. And Jeremy Fisher, who is going to, about to sing in the role of Lieutenant Cable. And that's double cast with?
Lee Steiner.
Lee Steiner. And Anna Rebecca Green in the role, the wonderfully titled role of Bloody Mary. And that's doubled by?
Yuan So.
Thank you, Yuan So. I always get mixed with her name.
And that's why I always write things down, because I'm going to forget myself. Julius Skeggs is in the role of Nellie Forbush, doubled by?
Ingrid Kamin.
Ingrid Kamin, okay. And our accompanist is Gretchen Church. And, of course, we've introduced our music director, Eduardo Diaz-Munoz. And this is from South Pacific, Rodgers and Hammerstein. You have to be carefully taught.
Yes.
On Live and Local.
You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made and people whose skin is a different shade. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be carefully taught.
So what's the background for that song? Jeremy, maybe we should ask you about this, because you're one of the ones who gets to sing it.
Yes. In the scene directly preceding that, Emil has a pair of children that he had with a Polynesian woman she died, and now Nellie's on the island, and they've fallen in love. And once Nellie found out about this, her prejudice sort of took over, and she refused to marry him due to this. And she was at a loss to explain why she felt the way she did. And Cable, in the previous scene that he was in, also had just broken up with the girl, the island native that he had met, for the same reason.
Because of his own prejudice?
Because of his own prejudices. And it sort of dawns on him for the first time that this isn't something that is born in you. It's really something that is passed down from your parents and your parents' parents. And he's sort of explaining this to Emil, why Nellie and he are the way that they are.
Yeah, it's a wonderful point. And if people, maybe those folks back then that you referred to, and anybody now who hears a song like that or has somebody say to them what the song says, then the natural inclination, if you realize its truth, is to get really defensive about it. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, go into denial. And we have such a long period of denial on the part of so many people in so many countries across the world. And that's why we do bad things to each other. I mean, that's really what it all comes down to. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so maybe we should have, at this point, the background for the show, the whole show, which has an interesting, I mean, it comes from a rather large novel, which I've certainly never read. Have you?
Well, it's a collection of about 10 stories, yeah. 10 short tales. And Hammerstein and Logan actually came up with the idea of putting together 3 or 4 of those tales to make a book. And out of that book, then they came up with a brilliant libretto. So there are 4 stories combined of a missionary's Pulitzer-winning, not novel, but this compilation of
Tales of the South Pacific, James
right.
Michener, yeah.
Exactly.
And how about an overview of the story? Who would like to take that on? Do you want to stick in that role, or one of you other guys? volunteer?
I could do that, I guess, if you want me to.
You just volunteered.
I guess so. It is
good for you, Jeremy.
In 1942, the U.S. and Japan are at war in the Pacific, and it's kind of a stalemate at this point. And on one of these islands in the South Pacific that the United States has taken over, they've been kind of stuck there for a year. They really have nothing to do. It's like I said, it's kind of a stalemate. Emile is a French planter who lives on the island. Nellie is a nurse with the Marine Corps or the Navy. And there are a bunch of other, the engineering corps and things like that make up most of the men's ensemble.
Okay. Well, the story basically focuses around two couples, Cable and Liat, and Emile and Nelly.
And Liat is an island woman.
Yes, this is an island native that Cable falls in love with. The show starts out with a scene in Emile's plantation, in which Nelly and Emile come on stage, and they're in the early stages of their building their relationship together, and the scene kind of builds with different musical numbers and Nellie's cockeyed optimist, and then a twin soliloquies between the two characters, and then the some enchanted evening. But the story progresses that you move on from the scene at Emile's plantation to the beachside, and you're introduced to all the Navy Marines, and they sing the big Bloody Mary number. But essentially, the story turns into, like we discussed in You've Got to Be Carefully Taught, it's a lot about racism and prejudice and kind of hope for the future past these difficult things that happen in war. You could describe a little about your character if you want.
Oh, yeah.
Julia.
Well, Nellie Forbush, she, as Ryan said, she's a nurse, and she meets this wonderful man who's a French planter. He's much older than her, but she falls in love with him, and she sings a song, "I'm in love with a wonderful guy," basically yelling from the mountaintops about how much she's in love with him. And then after that, you see right away the relationship between Cable and Liat when they first meet and how they fall in love. And it's a different kind of relationship, but nevertheless, they still are together. But then towards the end of the first act, Nellie finds out that Emile has two children from a Polynesian mother, and she can't be with a man like that. Her what she was brought up with has taught her that that's not acceptable, and she goes away from him, and that pretty much ends the first act right there.
Well, yeah, a funny note about that. Actually, in the first opening scene, Emile reveals to Nelly that he murdered a man, and that was the reason he had to leave France, and that's why he came to the South Pacific. And she actually forgives him for that, but when she finds out that he has a pair of Polynesian children, she kind of flies off the handle and decides to leave him. And I just think it's an interesting fact that she can forgive murder, but the fact that you have mixed breed children is too much for her to handle.
Yeah, we laugh at that now, but it's not funny because that's the way many people think.
Yeah, I mean, and it's unfortunate that that's the case, but you know, that's just the way a lot of people are raised.
I don't know. You guys did a good job.
Well, you know, but yeah, except that the person they've left out saying anything about is our other person here, Bloody Mary. Why are you called Bloody Mary? That's not actually your name.
No. Name's Mary, but it's a nickname that the sailors gave her. She's always around the seamen and the yeomen and trying to sell her wares, her grass skirts and her shrunken heads. And she plays around with the sailors, and every sailor that she sees is a chance for her to make money. She's profiting off the war. She actually says at one point, "Before the war, I saved $600, but now I'm rich. I've made $2,000 since the war started, and if it keeps going, I'll make more." So for her, this is surely a chance to make money and a better life for herself and her daughter. She actually used to be there to work for a French planter, and she got away from that and started basically her own business. And there's one sailor in particular, Luther Billis, who is just crazed about getting all these souvenirs to send back home and to show off in front of the other sailors. So she's usually able to get quite a bit of money out of him. She charges him $100 for a boar's tooth bracelet plus a bunch of grass skirts that he made she gets to keep and sell for herself now. So she's actually quite a financial genius, actually, in my opinion. But, you know, what do I know about finance?
So she's not so much a flirt as she is an entrepreneur.
Right. And when she first sees Cable, she definitely notices something different about him. And what I think is that, you know, she sees him, and usually people who are in a higher command tell her to get off Navy property. But he doesn't do that. He actually stops, and he's curious about her. And this sparks her interest, because not only is he high up, you know, he's well off, he's well kept, he's good looking. So he has money, obviously, if he's an officer, and he's good looking. And she has a daughter back home who's of age to get married. So, and Liat is Bloody Mary's daughter. So she really wants to bring him over to Valley High.
You didn't say that earlier.
Right. So she sings Valley High basically to entice him to coming over with mystery to the island. And when he gets there, oh, look, I have a beautiful daughter here. You two should spend some time together. And
yeah.
Basically, she tries to play matchmaker because, I mean, he's a great catch for her daughter. He's handsome, like I said. He's well-mannered. He's kind, which is more than can be said for the other man who's pursuing her daughter, who's a drunk and who would beat her. And he has money. It would be a very good life for her daughter. She's looking out for her daughter. And I think while, for the most part, she thinks about money first and foremost, I mean, she is a mother at heart, so she's going to look after her daughter. She's going to want the best for her.
And Jeremy's head is swelling from all of this praise that you're
offering
to his character of Lieutenant Cable. Well, is Bali High the name of the island?
Yeah.
There are two islands. There's the island that the Navy is on. And then there's another island where all of the French planters' women and all of the native girls went to avoid the Navy.
Yeah.
And only officers can actually go over to Bally High, so it's kind of a place of mystery where all of the enlisted men really want to go but can't. So it's for them it's more of an idea than an actual place. But for Cable, it's a lot more important than that.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that you've set up the song for me, I'm beginning to think differently about it, because I just suddenly had the image of, you know, the classical image of the sirens. Is that from Greek mythology?
Mm-hmm.
You know, beckoning people to the, of course, for anybody who got on that island, it was a tragedy, but not necessarily in this one. So I think we just gave the lead up to your song.
Okay.
This is Bali High from the musical South Pacific, being sung, the role of Bloody Mary being sung by Anna Rebecca Green, and once again our keyboardist is Gretchen Church, and these folks are from the University of Illinois production of South Pacific, which will go up next Thursday at the Krannert Center in Urbana.
Most people live on a lonely island, lost in the middle of a foggy sea. Most people long for another island, one where they know they would like to be. Bali High may call you any night. And shine in the street.
Wonderful. Wonderfully sung. Anna Rebecca Green in the role of Bloody Mary, and probably the signature song of that show. I mean, there's lots of shows well known, but Bally High certainly, I think, the signature song. As I said, they opened the overture with it, as we heard at the top of the show. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9, and we're talking about the musical South Pacific and the production that will be at the Krannert Center in Urbana next week, Thursday through Sunday, put on by the University of Illinois. Is it officially by the opera program or the combined opera and theater departments, or how is
it? No, it's officially sponsored by the opera program.
By the opera program. And Eduardo Diaz-Munoz is the director of that program, from whom we will hear more in just a few moments. Support for today's broadcast comes in part from the Music Shop and Pro Sound Center, now located at 27 East Market View Drive in Market View Plaza, Champaign. The Music Shop specializes in the sales and rental of band and orchestra instruments, digital keyboards, guitars, amps, and drums, along with a wide variety of sheet music. While you were singing that song, Anna, I started to think about the final Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Oh, and I actually haven't seen that.
Really? Because I was going to ask you if you got the accent from the character of Calypso. Who is in there? Who? Because while you were thinking, where did I hear this accent before? And there it is. Tell us about Bloody Mary. She is obviously not a Navy woman, but she is an Islander.
Right. Well, she's actually Tonkinese, which at this point in time, Tonkin was part of China, and she came over to work for a French planter. And actually, in the book, it goes a little more into detail about her. She came over with her daughter, but her husband, she left back in Tonkin, China. And she basically was trying to earn enough money to send back home so that they could be rich and live comfortably when they went back home. So she speaks French and the Tonkinese dialect. I'm not sure actually if that's a dialect of Chinese or not, but, for the most part, her daughter speaks French too. Her daughter speaks very little English, but she, however, has picked up English from the sailors. So she has quite the English vocabulary.
I'll bet she does, yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely learned how to swear like a sailor.
And how much of that do you get to make use of?
A fair amount.
So in other words, how should this musical be rated if we were going to give it a movie rating?
I don't know.
PG-13.
PG-13. There's some adult themes in there, yeah.
For language and adult themes, that's what we would say. You know.
Then again, I saw it when I was like 7, and I just had no clue what was going on in some of the more adult-themed parts.
Well, that's the thing kids don't know what goes on in Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Yeah.
But adults can watch them because they've got all these other little things underneath, mm-hmm. which is actually fun to watch the Roadrunner cartoons for that same reason, all those things I didn't get when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I had no idea. But this is of a rather different nature than that. How many of you have in fact read the stories or some of the stories of James Michener? Mm-hmm. I mean, since you mentioned them, everybody a little bit?
It's kind of been a required reading for us
in
terms
yes.
of our study and background. So.
Or at least highly endorsed
yes.
reading.
Well, that actually you raise a good question then. I mean, I'm going to ask it as a question. You raised it as a point, which is, since you are all in university and you are all learning to be singers and actors and so on, what kind of direction do you get about studying for a character, preparing for a character rather than the musical side of things?
yeah, I can take this one. Well, what we do is that we had our first read-through back in November, I believe, and it really can start there. You not only look at the things that you say, but what the other people say about you, what kind of persona you give off to other people. It did help to read the book because there's a lot of information about it. Like, I didn't know that Nellie had, like, she had four other siblings. That's just what I found out about my character. And actually, Emile de Bec had more than just two children. But that helped to give even more given circumstances. And then you go from there and, you look at the scenes that you're given and you try to find what your character wants to get at the end of it, what they want to get from the other person. But along with that, you also have the given circumstances, what they just came from, what just happened in the scene before, how would that affect them in their mental state.
And I think, the more specific you can get with any character, the better it's going to read on stage. We also had a dramaturg who did a very nice job of really pulling a lot from a lot of history from World War II and the era and really getting us sort of a feel for the time, which, I mean, that's personally a very interesting time for me personally, but... I don't know, for a lot of people, it's really getting the manner of speaking is different. The mm-hmm. the attitudes of the characters are different than what we embody today.
Yeah, we've also had an excellent diction coach, Robert Ramirez, help us with like the French accent that myself and Ricardo have to use for Emile, and she's worked with Ingrid and Julia for their Arkansas accent, and has worked with Anna and Yuan for
Tonkin,
yeah, if you want to call it that. So,
or something identified as Tonkin.
Yeah, we've had a lot of work on diction as well and learning how to speak correctly.
You mentioned the diction coach. Who is your dramaturg?
There was a team.
There were two people.
There were two.
Alyssa Norby was the assistant dramaturg.
What's the role of the dramaturg? It varies with the show, I think, but...
Well, basically to gather information about the time set, the period, and distribute it to the entire cast. That's basically her job, and try to translate, so to speak, what were the fashions, the modisms of the time, and just translate, so to speak, certain words, like what's a PBI or what's a P40 or... When they refer to "you've got sand," what does that mean? Well, you've got nerve, for instance.
An old expression that is old to us here. Mm-hmm. South Pacific, the production of the University of Illinois Opera Program. We're talking about it here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. We'll take a break for a moment and just give folks some of the other events this coming particular weekend, including tonight, the Champaign-Urbana Symphony performing at the Krannert Center in Urbana. That is at 7:30, featuring yesterday's guest on this show, violinist Gernot Winnischhofer in Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto. Also, the Eastern Illinois University Percussion Ensemble is performing tonight at 7:30 in Charleston at the Doudna Fine Arts Center. Charleston Alley Theater is presenting the play Steel Magnolias tonight at 7:30 and tomorrow same time, and then Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. The Illinois Wesleyan University School of Theater Arts is presenting Aristophanes' Lysistrata. That is at the McPherson Theater in Bloomington tonight and tomorrow at 8 o'clock and a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. The wonderful gospel group The Blind Boys of Alabama, joined by guest John Hammond, will be performing tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois at Springfield. Big Grove Zydeco playing some Cajun music Saturday night at 8 o'clock in Urbana, downtown at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. And on Sunday, Eastern Illinois University Chamber Orchestra and Collegium Musicum are playing music from Handel's Water Music and more. That's at the Doudna Fine Arts Center in Charleston, Sunday at 4. Countertenor Daniel Schutz is performing in Bloomington Sunday afternoon at 3 at St. John's Lutheran Church there. And the Illinois Brass Quintet at the University of Illinois, Faculty Brass Quintet, performing Sunday afternoon at 3 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. What are some of the musical challenge from a conductor's point of view of South Pacific?
Well, to understand the lines, basically, the balance of each song, what does a composer want to convey, the emotional state of the character, and from a more technical point of view, how you're going to balance the orchestrations, because there have been so many different orchestrations. I mean, like you said at the beginning of the show, Bennett's orchestrations are brilliant. But, you know, in Broadway, it's customary to have someone else other than the composer himself write the orchestrations, then the run is over, and then they throw them to the garbage. So when there's a new production, there's a new orchestrator that comes along with a new version.
So you are not doing Bennett's orchestration?
No, we're doing like a revived orchestration of his. But and that gives you also a little bit of freedom to change certain things based on what I recall from that original recording. Like in the movie, of the 1957 movie, the orchestration is different. I don't recall who did it. But then this other version, a new, much newer version from the 2000 movie, produced, co-produced and starred by Glenn Close. It's a different, totally different. It's more luscious. It's a huge symphony orchestra. And the renderings of each song, they're so different. You can hear that it's a full symphony orchestra and not a 35-piece orchestra or a 42-piece orchestra like the one we will have in the pit. So that gives me as a conductor a little bit of freedom to change certain disposition of chords or counter melodies to enhance it, but always keeping in mind the original version.
And I'm guessing that is a freedom you wouldn't necessarily feel in most operas.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. You have to be 190% respectful of the composer's wishes.
190%.
Yeah. 100 is not enough.
And why, I mean, why is that really? Because chances are from one production to another, early in most operatic, the history of most operas, there were probably changes made then.
Oh, yeah.
But yet we don't want to do that anymore.
No, because in those times it was the composer himself who would do those adjustments or changes. You see, in those times there were not the orchestrator kind of profession. It just didn't even exist.
I was surprised the first time when I learned that Bernstein did not orchestrate West Side Story.
Yeah, not all of it. All of it. Part of it, yes, but not all of it.
In a way, some of the magic went away for me because I thought, I thought he did all that stuff, but instead the magic got transferred. Was it Sid Raymond who did a lot of those?
Exactly.
Who? I mean, the guy is a brilliant orchestrator.
Yes.
I mean, so much of that show and some of the others owe so much to him. Right. Well, we should let somebody else do a song. We've heard two of you, who are here with us.
Yes.
Yeah, the other couple.
We haven't set up any particular scene, so you can choose.
Well, I guess we can do another one of the trademark songs from the show. The show comes from the first scene between Nellie and Emil, in which Emil is singing about his growing love for Nellie and about the first time they met at an officer's dinner. Mm-hmm. So I guess I will perform some Enchanted Evening from you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. See, that's one of those songs where I, when I saw, oh, that's from South Pacific. I just hadn't remembered that at all. Well, maybe we probably want to hear some of the others because they're choral numbers. Mm-hmm. We can look forward to those. Ryan Milstead in the role of Emil DeBeck, Some Enchanted Evening from the University of Illinois Opera Program's production of South Pacific here on Live and Local.
Some enchanted evening you may see a stranger. See a stranger across a crowded room, and somehow you know even then, that somewhere you'll see her again and again. Some enchanted evening, someone may be laughing. You may hear her laughing across a crowded room. And night after night, as strange as it seems, the sound of her laughter will sing in your dreams. Who can explain it? Who can tell you why? Fools give you reasons, wise men never try. Some enchanted evening, when you find your true love, when you feel her call you across a crowded room, then fly to her side and make her your own. Found her, never let her go. Once you have found her, never let her go.
I'm so envious of your head voice. It's something I've never learned to develop as a, it's supposed to be a baritone, but and that's also one of those songs I that's one of my favorite songs from the show. Mm-hmm. And really wonderfully sung, wonderfully Thank played you. Also Gretchen Church on the piano. Eduardo Diaz Munoz, conductor of and music director for this production, also director of the opera program at the University of Illinois. You mentioned at the outset, and one of the big reasons for choosing this show was financial. What do you think educationally it offers to the students in an opera program, particularly?
Well, to deal with a different style of music making, a different style of singing. And they are asked to do things that in a normal opera, they wouldn't do, such as dance and a lot of acting, a lot of dialogues are in between. There's a lot of underscored music in certain scenes, so the sense of pacing and timing is crucial.
Acting without singing, without
exactly, and acting on. Just with a spoken dialogue, but matching the dialogue with the music that's going underneath. That's of, that, of course, is a challenge for everybody, you know, not just for them, but also for me, while I'm keeping the pace of the music, so that there are specific, very specific sentences that a character at any given moment will have to say, but it has to coincide with the music that you're hearing. Like at one point during this last scene, that's the one that has been driving me crazy with Captain Brackett, that he's talking to Nelly, and at one point he says, "Oh, you don't need to blame him. He's a wonderful guy." And the idea is that when he says he's a wonderful guy, the orchestra has to play. There you go. Exactly. The orchestra has to be playing precisely that little cell of "I'm in love with a wonderful guy." So that's tricky.
It's a little easier for a pianist to be flexible and just sort of boom, kind of just start playing.
Exactly.
Then for all of a sudden you pick up this whole train that is an orchestra and you have to get it on the track and get it chugging and then...
Right, or try to slow
stop.
It down. And, you know.
Can be very difficult.
And now that you were saying about the most memorable tunes, and this just occurred to me, maybe part of the success of South Pacific is that all of its tunes are memorable and are great, all of them. Don't you think so, guys? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Because
definitely.
Probably we remember a show probably for two or three songs. But in this show, every character has a fabulous tune, even the chorale numbers, like Bloody Mary with all the seamen and the yeomen, and then the There Is Nothing Like a Dame.
That's one I was thinking of before. I'd love to hear that, but you need a whole bunch of guys to.
Yes.
That's for you and I would have to. You and I would actually have to jump in and sing that.
Exactly. For instance, that's another liberty, freedom that the conductor can have, because according to the cast that we've chosen, then I start to assign who sings what line, and that's a lot of fun too. It's challenging, but it's fun to. Because you have to assign those lines, what they're saying, and according also to their voices, to their voice type, but also to their physical appearance. So it's been fun.
Is it a nice or not so nice thing that in a musical a conductor actually gets to rest now and then?
Well, not really.
Is this through composed score?
Yes.
Is it really? I didn't realize.
Well,
that.
No, there are maybe four scenes that. There's no music, but the cues have to be so precise, and that's something that it's...
Yeah, but I mean, at least you can stop conducting every once in a while.
Oh, yeah, every once in a while, but you know, you have two stands, one for the music and the other one for the libretto,
sure.
So you can follow all the dialogues.
If your brain stops, then something's going to happen up ahead.
Well,
not,
hopefully
not
that
very
won't
good.
Happen.
Well, Nelly... Mm. I think you're on.
Oh, I think so, too. Well, I guess since we were just talking about it, I could sing Wonderful Guy. That's all right.
That's another
Perfect.
Song.
Your choice.
Right. Julia Skeggs, in the role of Nellie Forbush from South Pacific here on Live and Local.
I expect every one of my crowd to make fun of my proud protestations of faith in romance. And they'll say I'm naive as a babe to believe any fable I hear from a person in pants. I'll face them and argue their doubts away. Loudly I'll sing about flowers and spring. Flatly I'll stand on my little flat feet and say, love is a grand and a beautiful thing. I'm not ashamed to reveal the world famous feeling I feel. I'm as corny as Kansas Christmas in August, I'm as normal as blueberry pie. No more a smart little girl with no heart, I have found me a wonderful guy. I am in a conventional dither with a conventional star in my eye. And you will note there's a lump in my throat when I speak of that wonderful guy. I'm as trite and as gay as a daisy in May, a cliche coming true. I'm bromidic and bright as a moon, happy night, pouring light on the dew. I'm as corny as Kansas in August, high as a flag on the 4th of July. If you'll excuse the expression I use, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love with a wonderful guy.
That was silent applause in the background that I could see and you couldn't, but it was certainly well deserved for Julia Skeggs in the role of Nellie Forbush. Are you guys a cast together? Because all of these roles are double cast.
Actually, I'm the only one who's in the other cast. It's a little awkward. No, it's not.
I'm still loving
it. No,
good.
Because you're in rehearsals, we flip flop.
Yeah. Surely you're not rivals.
No,
not at all.
But let's just say people are partial to the three of the four of you in this group who are and would like to go see you guys now that they've heard you. Which nights are you going to be performing? Which performance are you doing?
Well, Anna, Jeremy, and myself will be performing Thursday night and Saturday night. And then Julia's cast will be performing Friday evening and Sunday afternoon.
Right, and those times for the Thursday through Saturday of next week, not this week, Thursday haven't already happened, are at 7:30, and Sunday matinee on the 28th, I think it is at 3 o'clock, everything at the Cranert Center for the Performing Arts. We have just a couple of minutes left. I should mention that support for our program comes from World Harvest International. Comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. Coming up at 1 o'clock, I'll have a forecast for you. At 1:01, we have news headlines from NPR, and Julie Amacher has classical music for you starting at 1:06. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. And now that you have all sung, I feel a little safe about asking this question. And in doing so, I'll probably reveal my own prejudice. But for any of you, but I guess Eduardo in particular, what do you think of current singing on Broadway?
Oh gosh.
You go first, and I'll go last.
Oh.
Bearing in mind that we have just a few minutes.
It's very Disney-esque, I found.
And pop music-like.
Cookie cutter.
Yeah,
a lot of it sounds exactly the same.
A lot of people don't end up learning proper vocal technique and burn themselves out very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing 8 shows a week and you never actually learn how to sing, your career is over in 5 years or less.
At most.
Yeah.
And you
maybe
probably
less.
Need surgery to remove nodes.
Absolutely.
Because you can't sing like this forever.
No.
Right?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, he nailed it.
There's a place for healthy belting. Absolutely.
Oh, definitely, yes.
But most performers today don't ever learn how to do that.
Yeah, and probably another problem that adds to this general issue is that they're always mic'd. So they rely a lot on the volume of the sound engineer or the producer or even the conductor when he's mixing. And they really, like Jeremy said, they never learn how to properly support the voice.
It's actually been a little hurdle for the opera performers anyway, because we're actually being mic'd for this show.
I was going
to
ask.
Yeah, it's kind of different having to learn how to work with a mic and not actually producing your full sound.
So why the microphones then?
Well, it was a huge topic of discussion, and ultimately, as artistic director, all of those decisions end up in my hands.
Uh-huh.
I made the call because there are so many dialogues that, and with the underscore going on simultaneously, I was afraid that they would not be heard.
So as much for the speaking as for the singing.
Exactly. Yeah. And we've been doing this last couple of weeks. Actually, this week, when we started to work with the sound engineers right on site, that my suggestion was that whenever this guy sings, since they project tremendously well, say that we have a range of 5 dBs or something like that, and then when they speak, then the level should be raised maybe 3 or 4 dBs so that there wouldn't be that much of a difference. Because they're going to project. I mean, they can be heard on top of the orchestra without the need of a mic, but when they speak, that's a different matter.
Yeah. Having just done L'Histoire du Soldat, The Soldier's Tale, at the Canopy Club recently, that was the issue. It was the speaking of the actors to make sure it would cut through the, just the general atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want it to be lost, otherwise you've lost the whole story.
Exactly.
Well, having heard all of you, I'm really looking forward to seeing the show. And I don't know which one I'm going to see, so it's whichever one the schedule works out, not whether I was enamored of everybody singing, which I was. You all did a beautiful job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ryan Milstedt is one of two, Emil Debex with Ricardo Sepulveda, Jeremy Fisher, Lieutenant Cable with
Lee Steiner,
Anna Rebecca Green, Bloody Mary with
Yuan So,
and Julia Skeggs is Nellie Forbush with
Ingrid Kameen.
Gretchen Church is accompanist with others probably in the rehearsal process.
Sarah Cushman and Jennifer Garrett.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And Eduardo Diaz-Munoz, solo conductor and music director for South Pacific. Don Harris is the stage director. And you heard them all on Live and Local. The show goes up next week, Thursday through Sunday, at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. For more information, krannertcenter.com. On Monday's Live and Local, we will be talking with the new director of bands at the University of Illinois in advance of his first outing with the University of Illinois Wind Symphony. That's on Monday's show from 12 to 1. Thanks for listening. This is FM 90.9.